words, and thanks to O'Vale and my fellow poets and carried in your honor. I'm going to read a poem or two from a future collection, actually two, inspired by talks earlier today. Someone said, if you liked a poem, it's from the heart, and so do I. So I'll read one from a new collection, a work in progress. Quite short. When I'm afraid of the dark, when I'm afraid of the dark, I remember that you laughed at the dark. When I'm afraid that you will leave me, I remember that you wept and came back. When I'm afraid of myself, I remember that you were afraid of me when I was not myself, and so I became myself again for the love of you, so that you never need be again afraid. When I'm afraid of the dark, I remember such things. When I'm afraid of the dark, I remember such things. I have known love, you have shown it to me. It is the human soul to the very bottom. It is the fear of God which is the soul to the very bottom. And I remember that you laughed at the dark, and that you wept and came back, and were not afraid of such things. Now I'll read the one other one from this collection. I'm sure you won't mind. It refers to a place in another city. And someone mentioned earlier today the Croke Park. So here's Croke Park. What a dream that was, what a good dream, what a bad dream. I'd toiled for years, my friends had toiled, and all my friends gone now. The girl behind the counter selling sweets at the match forgotten, but never she. She an old woman now, if she is at all. And the match well played or badly played, and the crowd not really caring, because better to be at a match than not. That's all I remember, all I want to remember. A girl in black selling sweets at a match on a dull Dublin day, and Babylon fell, and all who were in it, and great was the fall of it. And all my friends crushed and discarded long ago, and I never next. A girl in black waiting to sell orange ices, and no one looked on her, only at their ices, and scents, and scents. And the crowd yelled within the cement stairs and was glad to be yelling rather than not. And the players did the best they could. And no one to vent anything now, and nothing to vent. What a dream that was, what a good dream, what a bad dream, and no one left to remember. And now, my two-person cheering section and I were in Bantry last summer, but the summer before Bantry was a return because my wife and I had spent summers in Whiddy Island a long time ago, and poems came from it. So I'll read these two Bantry poems, and then I'll go into anniversary. There were other poems that some people have asked me to read, but time won't permit, and I do want to read from anniversary. So this is a diptych in a way. It's called Off Bantry, and I just learned yesterday it'll be in the Stinging Fly, a publication in Dublin, the next or the next or the next. So just to give you, because when I was in poetry, in literature classes, I very sensitively, as a poet who was blooming inside, would say, how long is it? So this one is this long, and this one is this long. So it's two poems, and it's called Off Bantry. You folded blankets and put them in the armoire. There was a grace in that, and no surprises. You folded sheets, dried in Whitty Island sun, You pressed them with your hand. There was no need of ironing. We were closing up the rented summer house, leaving it for the next ones. Dusting, swabbing, replacing, locking the clean windows, moving as two solids through the solids of the house, moving as one soul through the souls of the house, for there had been many souls and there would be the next ones. And during one bad moment, I had been many souls. Moving through the bad and good moments of the house, the yard outside with its daily sheep droppings because of the gaps in the fence, blue sky and white clouds above. Fresh flowers are better than dried flowers any day, except when pressed into the pages of a book. The words on the page written, sold, published, not changing, there. The dried flower, a cornflower in our case, also there. But infinitesimally changing, desiccating, browning at the edges like the paper of the pages, and hats off to that. What is done between two people can never be undone. What is said between two people can never be unsaid. To try to change in the mind what happened is to block transfiguration. You were upstairs folding sheets that smelled of sun. I left out on the table a tacky summer book. No one would ever press a flower into it, or would they? Who knows what things can happen in the house? Then the second of the two poems, Cowbells, which is not only short but slender. By the way, this poem is straight reportage, as are most of my poems. Do cows still wear them? You'd asked. We were not near Klosters in Switzerland, so no. We were on Whitty Island, where the cows are wild. Their ears twitch there. Who cares? We were together, homing. Road, hill, house. Long time ago. Was this your house? Serge asked, a friend in my pilgrimage. I couldn't speak, which was the same as yes. Two stories, white, red the trim, green the yard and brown. Someone, a couple again, lives there all the time now. Yeah. Sheets, shirts, pants flapping on plastic strings in open Irish air. Cowbells somewhere, he asked. They, that's sure. They, ballooning like a shirt, faded clean by sun and wind. Hill, house, a smell of bed. Not Klosters, cowbells. Yes, cowbells. And now, anniversary, as I told George a little earlier, the one copy which wound up in my bag is from Hodges Figgis because I bought it, because it was so unbelievable that somebody would publish a book of mine that I went to the bookstore and saw it on the shelf, bought it, and even told the clerk, your last one's gone, it's a wonderful book. Because to be published is a miracle, but it's also a fact. It has to be a one-to-one with one human being at the other end of the line. And if Jesse Landelli of Salmon did not publish me, I can tell you for a fact no one would, because nobody did and nobody's queued up now. So this changed my entire life. I'll read you the title poem and then some random poems from it. And I do want to say that I'm not dining out on my life here. There are always couples. One of them always goes first. There are always parents. If you live to be old enough, you wind up an orphan. This is everybody's book. and poems that I write for myself personally, I don't send out to be published. They're nobody's business. I write for people who need a good poem in the worst way, and that's where we are with this. So this is called Anniversary. You left your shawl on the chair. I don't know what got into you. You never do things like that. I enter the room, and there's the shawl. In the morning, the light hits it. Part of the fringe touches the floor now. It didn't used to. Sometimes, I suppose, gravity pulls it. Last night, I thought I heard the chair say, "How much longer? I'm not her shoulders." "No," I said, "you're not." In the morning, the weave catches the light, when there is light. "Doesn't this desk have a chair?" the mover asked. "Did my buddy move it out?" "No, it's the first," I said. "Oh, good," he said. The light hits the floor where the carpet was, or the hole where the floor was. "You were always so careful about that shawl. You never wanted it to brush the ground. Why did you leave it on the chair then? You never did things like that." Now skipping into the book a little. A very short poem, "Thought of You." It starts with an epigram from the Odyssey, which is translated by E.V. Rieu. It's one of the first Penguin books. And it's the very first words in the Odyssey. And it's the epigram. "This is the tale I pray the divine muse to unfold. Begin it, goddess, at whatever point you will." I should have jotted it down when the goddess came. I thought poetry was something that only happened to other people. So I continued on my way to shop, to buy something that reminded me of you, and so I bought it, and now I own it, and so I lost you all over again. A good thick poem. This was accepted by Stony Thursday Book, and I almost fainted. I didn't think anybody would take this one. Anyway, it's another shorty. A good thick poem. "Blue guitars and thin gold birds do what for whom? The last thing eternity needs is an interior decorator." I want to know. I want a good, fat, stunted poem. Plain talk and drool weaving like a drunk across a tennis court. Talk at me. Am I loved? Where did she go? What should I do? Who killed Hope in the parlor with a gun? Colonel Mustard? Answer me, so I won't forget. Club me with it, so I never have to read again. "Well, madam, he's dead in the library, all right. Only a good, thick poem could have done that." Here's a poem, I put it in the book because it fits. I wrote it when I was 20. Sir Philip Sidney. "Sir Philip Sidney had a kidney, chop, chop, chop. Emily Bronte had bad bronchi, chop, chop, chop. Cover your front, cover your back. Humans have art, but time's got an axe. Chop, chop, chop." Very different mood. "I don't dare to read a peach, but I think I dare to read this," and it's quite a long one. I have two nationalities, American and Irish, and God bless both of them. I have many, many poems published, and not a single one in my natal land. This one, which takes place definitely in my natal land, and that nobody published there, was published immediately by Cyphers here. and maybe just as well. Anyway, it's rather long. And here we go. Just to give you a sense of the variety in the book, really. And this is also sacred portage. Today I opened an envelope sent by my cousin Elizabeth from Ringgold, Georgia, USA. Elizabeth indicates, rather than writes, never more than 2 dozen words, rose petals, some dried, some fresh, all fragrant. Out fell an article of hers, top of page 5A, the Rolla Daily News, 26 June 2007, entitled, Her Band of Gold Always Caught the Light. A reminiscence of her late mother Lillian, my aunt, whom I had never met. There she was, a photo of her, circa 1936, atop Elizabeth's not more than 200 words, a strong young woman emerging from shadow, the head tilted slightly down, a half smile, thick, beautiful brown eyebrows, a broad forehead kind and troubled and kind. The left hand rested near the shoulder of the black dress. On one finger, the ring that her husband Jack had given her, yes, caught the light, as later it did when, Elizabeth writes, Lillian would play piano for her children. The ring lost now, Elizabeth writes, meaning is somewhere unknown. An article in a newspaper, local news as befits the universe, about things lost and found and lost, about Lillian, about Elizabeth's late husband, Myron, another love match, about human dignity, about the dignity of so-called things. Reading it, seeing the photos, one, two, of Elizabeth and Myron finding something that had been immured for 100 years in an old shack, a pair of glasses a carpenter had left on the support brace, one was less ashamed of the human condition. Tomorrow I shall fold the story in four so that it shows only the photograph of Lillian. I shall frame it and put it on my wall for daily seeing, for knowing that some leave the world a better place than they found it, or try. And I think that my wall will say, me too now. 4 days ago, I thought of Harry, 20 years my senior, my first real friend, dead in 1975. And with him, the thought that of one's first real friend, and here I mean first real friend. One could say he sank deep into the soft wax of my capacity to love. I had half forgotten it until Lillian and Jack and my father and Myron and the carpenter and my wife and Harry and my mother and that astonishing rest came tumbling out of an envelope from a cousin in Ringgold, Georgia, who notices what catches the light. And now coming from the United States to France, was a scrap of a newspaper that a friend from New York State had sent me for when I was going through a tough time, as everybody goes through a tough time. And I'll read the clipping and then the poem that came from it. The poem came months later, and you all write poetry and you know how that is. It arrived. It mugged me. But I like the little scrap out of the envelope, and it says, an excavation made in 1975 behind the town of Vedbæk in Denmark revealed the body of a tiny child laid to rest in the embrace of a swan's wing. Next to the skeleton was the grave of the child's young mother, dead in childbirth. Her face had been dusted with ochre, the better to seem alive. Mother and child had been interred around 4800 BC. News clipping 2004. And the poem came Black Swan, White Swan. Black swan, white swan, bear my child higher and higher to the isle, past the last star's dial, winkless black swan, white swan. Black swan, white swan, bear my child in steep sleep unreconciled, past the snares we defile, past our pile, to the isle, brinkless, live child, dead child, black swan, white swan. Black swan, white swan, bear my child higher and higher to the isle, live child, dead child, live child, linkless, black swan, white swan, black swan, white swan, bear my child past the circles wild and mild, higher and higher, black swan, white swan, black swan, inkless, swan child, child swan, one, my child, my swan, black swan, white swan, gone. If you go, that's very more comfortable. Sometimes a phrase can release a poem, but one doesn't know why. I was rereading actually The Secret Agent by Conrad. And he refers the narrator to someone walking in his mortal envelope, and I've never ever heard it expressed that way before. And this poem came. Justinian. Justinian. No, not the famous one. Just me. Rain of Cincinnatus. Something transparent slipped. Still in my mortal envelope. Don't know why. Banks of the D, bung craters, sirens, flares, fake airfields to fool the Jerry. Chester, 1940. A ridiculous number, really. I'm walking all right across the field, the flares, the smell of the estuary, the smell of rancid margarine. No hurry to cross. The field seems as decent as any other. My family must be asking, where's Justinian? Everyone else got here. This language is like glass, yet I think in it. They said the Egyptians had glass. We couldn't quite grasp what it was supposed to be, nor why. Just be good, my mother said. That helps, rather. No hurry to cross this field. Gaps as good as get. The Jerrys were always a bit strange, as was night. Seems you've got both now for a while, Justinian. Now here's a 17-syllable poem, not a haiku. Mm. I was so ignorant that I thought anything in 17 syllables was a haiku, and this did come out. It's so short, it's one of the only ones I've memorized. Pope finishes last in the race. The rest of the runners are dead. I once read an interview many years ago with a famous actress, Judith Anderson. She was Mrs. Danvers in the original Rebecca, and an actress to be reckoned with. And well retired and well dained, she was touring the United States of America as Hamlet, and was asked why, naturally. And she said, I've been associated with Lady Macbeth and Medea and all the great roles. And almost all the great in almost all the great works for the theater, and I mean the great ones, the problem of the woman is the man, but the man's problem is the universe. So I'm playing Hamlet. Thank you very much. But there's an exception. one or two, and one of them is Antigone, whose story I'm sure you know, and this poem came to me. And I think
Okay.
So, Antigone. I've come to bury my brother. I never would put him in a warm bed. Now, I put him in a cold one. He has already rotted because he is earth, but earth is never rotten, so I have come to put him in it. To leave him on it is indecent. The stars shift, the earth shifts, and in between is a privilege. My brother was obnoxious, but he breathed. I, who am breaking the law by burying my brother, am breathing, which is all I hear. Any form of breath has value, given its source. Even my when he was breathing, hateful brother, even the judges who condemn him to rot, even I, the always ugly one, I did not know this yesterday. I know it now. When we forget the breathing of our brother, we become all of us dangerous. So, I have come to ask mercy of my brother, but he is not here. He has shifted with the stars. I am therefore doing the next best thing that is like love. I have come to bury my brother. The important thing about love is not that it may be eternal, but that it can be retroactive. It is not eternity that brings me here this night. Tell that to your lawyers in the morning. And here's another, let's say, love poem. Portrait of a Portrait of My Wife. This was published in Canada, so I'm getting close to my age. Portrait of a Portrait of My Wife. Done in Provincetown in 1967 by her boyfriend at the time in four pastels on gray paper. The planes of her face, the movement of his hand, two masters always, the drawn and the drawer. A spot of light, hers, difficult to tell with portraits, just outside the frame. Green chalk on gray paper, yellow chalk, red chalk, white chalk, smeared together to make the line of a cheek, the brown of a jumper, the russet of hair, eyes, hers, but whose now? Wide and calm, as befits gray paper, and an hour in Provincetown stolen away from the master of life. A portrait of not yet my wife. The poise of the head, hers to this day. The stroke of the hand, his that day. The eye of the viewer, mine not yet twisted away today. And a spot of light just outside the frame, where poise, hand, eye coincide. This, although the bride is long since smashed and hurled into green, yellow, red, white elementals, and no one can paint a portrait of that picture. So, an aged blob staring in a chair, a rectangle on the wall opposite, a spot in between, a room in slabs of colors and light, held in an equation. A girl's face brought into being by the hand and love of an important boyfriend. And an old man's thanks for that. Make the portrait of not yet my wife, the portrait of my wife. Alleluia.
One more.
All right, one more. One more. apocrypha. Just it's book bingo. So. Apocrypha. This is the length of it. Beloved, don't expect a letter from me, not from Patmos, not to Corinth. You are the envelope. The letter is in you. You have written it in expectation. What did you hope I would write you? What did you hope I would counsel you? How badly did you hope I would miss you? Here, I shall help you find it under your ribs. It is sodden. It is shameful. It is stamped all over with the stamp rejected by experts. It is, in fact, like mine, crushed into a ball under my own ribs. Love is bad guesses, sent unerringly of themselves. What need have we then for letters?